Good morning to everybody. Continuing today, Kohelet's fourth chapter, verses 15 and 16. And we'll start just in about 1 or 2 minutes. And once you hear the audio, just type audio okay at the bottom of your screen, and we should be starting momentarily. Okay, Abner, thanks. Morning, Doug.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Cal?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Sorry, on the phone still there?
Hi, good morning, Rabbi.
Good morning. Good morning, how are you?
Hi, good morning, it's Jessica.
Okay. All right, so we're up to chapter 4, verses 15 and 16. How's the audio year in there, Doug?
That's fine, Rabbi, thanks.
Okay, so let's start. And this is a continuation, it's just this review. We discussed last week how King Solomon was comparing the poor young child who is wise to the present king who is a fool. And he was praising, of course, the child. And that was stated in order to correct the unstated notions which people have. And again, this is the reason why you have all statements in the Torah, is to correct what a person might think otherwise. So the wrong assumption is that because the king is in power, and maybe he's older, this is something which is of worth. And And the reason why people don't value the child who's young is because they can't look down the road. And we mentioned that Pirkei Avos, Ethics of the Fathers, teaches that who is wise? One who knows the outcome, one who knows the future events, what will happen in the future. A person doesn't just make decisions what he sees now. A wise person, a person who's wise, calculates he forecasts the results of all different variables. And because of that, he understands that there's a certain operation to the world. If he does X, Y will happen. But a fool is one who just does X without any consideration for the result of his actions. So the foolish people would value the king because they see the state of him being a ruler, and that's something which everybody wants, power, fame, money. But if they thought a little bit down the road, they'd realize that somebody with wisdom understands how the world operates to a far greater degree than somebody who's a fool. A fool actually doesn't understand how the world operates. So give the child a little time and you'll see how he will surpass the king. So that was what we said in verse 13. And then 14 was a qualification of that, as he shows an example, citing an example, one of the commentaries, Ibn Ezra. He says this is really referring to Joseph when it says, "For from the house of prison he came forth to be a ruler." And even the king in his reign, the current king who's older, he was born naked and empty. So if he can come to the status of a king, but having been in an initial state of depravity, which every human being is when they're born, they're deprived of everything, intelligence, food, clothing, the know-how to do anything. But look, this person is now a king after decades of life. So he's trying to educate. King Solomon is trying to educate the reader. And by giving an example of two cases, Joseph, who was in prison and used his wisdom to become a ruler, and the current king, who himself went through a transition. And we said the underlying problem that causes people to have the incorrect notion is their tendency to follow the incorrect notion of permanence. Things will not change. And this is engendered into a person's psyche after the years and decades that he's alive and sees a constant system of nature. So he, unfortunately and incorrectly, he projects what he sees in terms of the natural law onto the fact that, onto the world of free will of human beings that have the ability to make change. Okay, so now we go further. Now we go to the new verses. So King Solomon says, we're in 4, 15, and 16 is what we'll read. So he says as follows, "I have seen all of the living that traverse under the sun with this young child," the second one. The second one, according to Ben Ezra, means he's called the second in terms of being the second king, because he usurped the first king because of his wisdom. So that's why he's called the second one here. So he says, "I've seen all the living that travel underneath the sun with this second child that rose up in his place." I mean, he rose up in place of the first king, who was old and foolish. And the next verse, "There is no end to all the people, to all that were before them. Also, the next generation will not rejoice in him," meaning in this young, wise king. And he says, "This is also futility and a vexation of spirit." All right, so the first verse again, "I've seen all the living that," and it's very helpful to have the text in front of you, because this is the whole method by which we derive the intended meanings, is by seeing the nuances in the text, in certain words. And this is the system by which the Torah is spread, by being very careful and true to the words, holding ourselves back from saying something which is not warranted by the text. As Roy Chait would always say, what must you say? And his message is that when you see a verse, don't say something which you can say. The explanation has to be something which is warranted by the actual words in the verse. And that's how one develops their ability to see new ideas and greater truths, as opposed to the manner that some people just, and many people, they just say what they think, you know, it might fit in, but that's not a process of learning the verse. That's a process of, you know, free association. That's not how Torah is derived. Yeah, Avner, we're in chapter 4, verses 15 and 16 in Kohelis, okay? All right. All right, so, again, so he says, I've seen all the living that traverse under the sun with the second child that rose up in place of the king, in his place. There is no end to all the people, to all those that came before them, and also the next generation, the latter generations, will not rejoice in this king, this young king. This is also futility and a vexation of spirit. Okay, look at the verses for a few minutes and try to determine what is unique now. It's always the process. What is the unique statement in this verse? Because there's no two verses in the Torah that are identical. And again, we noted certain methods already, like repetition, contrast. There are different methods by which we are alerted to what the subtle clues are to the meaning behind the verses. The child that's wise.
So I mean, it seems like he's talking about the remembrance of a king.
No, not the remembrance of the king. It says there's no end to all the people, to all those that went before them, and also to the latter generations. And also the latter generations will not rejoice in him, in that second king.
Right, so what does it mean to rejoice in a king?
Okay.
I mean, he could be talking, it seems like, about that if the latter generations will not rejoice in him, this current king, then it suggests that he won't be remembered. Or it simply could be that, you know, you're not going to please all the people all the time anyway.
Good. I mean, made him rejoice in his teaching. And he's talking about, see, initially he was just talking about that the king, the young child, is wise, will rise to power. Because wisdom is how the world operates. So now, what is he talking about in these two verses? Let's categorize these. You see, he's referring here now to the actual reign of that child, not the transition to power. But now, subsequent to the transition, and now he's in power, because he says he now is standing in his place. He rose in place, in the first 15 says that. He says, I've seen all the living that traverse under the sun with this young king, the second child, who became his wise, that he rose in the place of the first one. So now it's talking about the actual rulership of this wise child.
Okay. And I assume then that the first half of 16, when it says there's no end to all the multitudes who preceded them, the them is all of the people who the second king is reigning over.
Well, I think that what it means, my understanding, is that there's no end to all the people, to all those that preceded them, meaning the generation that's following this king. So let's call this king Joseph, because that's what he referred to earlier. He typified the an example of the one who comes out of prison and rises to power as being Joseph, as being an example. So let's just call him Joseph. So there's no end to all the people, to all those that came before the people of Joseph, right? So there's no end to all the people, to all the people that came before Joseph, and also everybody who comes after that generation. Nobody will rejoice in Joseph, and this is a futility and a vexation of spirit. So he's talking about, just so we can understand a reference, he's talking about the actual rulership of the king, not the transition from prison to being a ruler because of wisdom. That was what we discussed last week, the previous two verses. Okay, so now we're talking about the actual rulership. He's looking at it, because he says, I've seen all of the living that traverse the earth, that travel under the sun with this king, with this Yeled, with this child that became king.
So then I'd have to ask, what is the whole purpose of King Solomon even bringing up the first half of 16 when he says there's no end to all the multitudes who preceded them? Like, well, what does that have to do with anything?
Good. Exactly.
Can we ask another question, too? What does that mean? Because I don't understand the phrase. I don't understand there's no end to the multitudes.
People keep on coming. If there's no end to the multitudes, that means new generations keep on rising up.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, but to Jim's point, that can't technically be true, because if you pick a king at a particular point in time and say there's no end to all the multitudes who preceded him or the generation over which he's ruling, well, there is an end when you go all the way back to Adam.
Right. So you have to understand it to mean that it's like it just doesn't stop, meaning there's so many. In case there's no end to all the people, to all those that were before them. So, of course, there's a discrete quantity of human beings that existed in prior generations. I agree with you.
Okay. So then the second half seems to be talking about what later generations will do, but there doesn't seem to be any purpose for Evan bringing up. I mean, he's basically saying, well, there's a lot of people that came before these people.
Right, it seems to be, right, it's a problem. It's a very problematic statement.
It's so obvious. I don't think King Solomon would have said that if he didn't have some good reason.
Right, and he also says, gam, also. So if you say also, that means you have to be connecting the statement that you just made and the subsequent statement. I can't say I also like apples if I didn't say something I like prior to that, right? I have to say I like X, and I also like apples. So then, the also is referring to objects that I like. But I can't start out a statement by saying I also like apples. It doesn't make sense. Also implies that there is something that's related. So when he says also, the latter generations will not rejoice in him. So what do you have to say that means?
Well, apparently the previous generations didn't rejoice in him either.
Good.
I take it the gom occurs in the middle of 16?
Yes.
The phrase break? Okay.
Okay. There's also a repetition here. If you look, there's something which was repeated many times. What's repeated in these two verses?
We've got three mentions of, in 15 he talks about all the living,
Okay.
He also uses the phrase beneath the sun again.
Right beneath the sun. Good. That's a good observation. And you'll note also he uses a... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say the phrase futility and vexation of spirit.
Okay. But that's not... those are not repeated. Those are important to note. But those aren't repeated within these two verses. Okay, and Avner, I see your questions on screen. I'll get to them. All right. Just to note some more observations, he talks about, I could have worded the first verse as follows. I've seen people, and if you want to say even under the sun, fine. But what does he add by saying that traverse, that travel? What do I care that they're traveling? Okay? Then he says that they travel with this second king. And then he says that he rose up in place of the first one. So you might just say it's factual, but there may be something more to it. And then, Doug, as you pointed out, what does this mean in the next verse, in 16, that there's no end? What do you mean no end to the people? To all of the people, to all those that were before them, and also the latter generations will not rejoice. So that means, of course, that the first generations didn't rejoice when they came. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read you Sforno now. Okay. So he says as follows. I've seen all the living, and this in itself occurs... he's referring to something which occurs in terms of people that are involved in temporal occupations or temporal involvements that are under the, sun, because for I've seen the living that go, that they travel, and what does it mean they travel? That they're striving in matters of their livelihoods, and they go to this young wise king to get good advice, sound advice that would be good in terms of their livelihoods, houses, clothing, work, things of that nature. Then he says on the words that he rose up in place of the first king, that he was lower in his status, in the stand of a child who is wise. Then he goes on. There's no end to all the people that were before them. And now he says an interesting point. He says, this I've seen in my days. Meaning, Sforno is talking as if this is what he understands King Solomon to be saying. So he's paraphrasing King Solomon's underlying thoughts. So he says, I have seen, meaning King Solomon is saying, that I've seen in my days the striving of all the living beings, that they go after temporary interests, and they seek, they draw after the counsel of this king, and they abandon this first child and his wisdom to obtain a physical existence. And it's meaning to say, just their own concern to what happens here on earth, which now explains what does it mean under the sun. His critique, King Solomon's critique, is regarding what's under the sun, meaning the earthly existence. And he sees people are just going after what is necessary. They're abandoning the wisdom and of this king just so they can obtain physical needs. And not only in my generation alone this has occurred, but this has occurred also in the first generations that were beforehand. Right? That's what it means, even before them. In verse 16 he says, there's no end to all the people, to all that were before them. And he says, what does he mean there's no end? That they that the majority of them abandon the eternal life and they involve themselves in the temporary life. And, but behold, those people, their memory is already lost. They're already gone. Which is an important clue. And he says further, when he refers, he says, even the later generations don't rejoice in this wise king, meaning in their strivings with this king, it's only for temporary involvement. So he repeats that idea. So they're going after things which do not matter at all. Because they abandon their wisdom just so they can acquire imaginary things. Okay. But you see, you hear what he's saying over there. He's saying that the words in verse, if we read it again now, inserting this explanation. So what King Solomon is saying, Contesforno, is that I've seen all the living that go under the sun, meaning they're traveling under the sun. Now, what do you mean traveling? Why does he just say, I've seen all this generation, I've seen all these people. So I think that the traveling means to say a passing of time. He's intimating at that, the subtle nuance. And but it's all under the sun, that all the travelings, all their interests, meaning all their strivings, are after the temporary life. Okay. But then he makes a critique. He says there's no end to all the people, to all those that came before them. Meaning they came and went. And also the latter generations. Latter generations tells you that, what does it tell you about the current generation? That it will expire. Because if the current generation never expires, you can't have a latter generation. That means it's the same people. So the very statement of the latter generations tells you that the previous generation expires. And none of them rejoice in this king's wisdom. So his message becomes clear now that he is saying that what people are doing, although the king was wise and he went through a transition from coming from prison into power, and he's understanding, and he was successful in that maneuver to use his wisdom to rise to power, to help the people. Nonetheless, King Solomon says most people will not follow him. Most people are absorbed in the temporary existence. What's happening here and now? Wealth. The impressiveness of my home, the car I drive, the suit that I wear, how much money do I have, what do people say about me? He says this is what they are concerned with. So how does King Solomon attempt to correct that notion? He brings one element into the picture. That's called expiration, that people expire. That's what he means to say by saying there's no end to all the people, to all those that came before. And also the latter generation won't rejoice in him. Meaning there's generation after generation. And he spoke about that earlier, but now it's in connection with not following the wise words of the king. So right now he's just talking about the phenomena. He's describing very subtly the phenomena. And that is because what it talks about in the first verse, that the people are traveling on the earth. They're absorbed in their life under the sun. That becomes their focus. So then all the interest that they have in gaining wisdom from the king is purely to obtain these imaginary acquisitions, as Sorna says. But then he tries to address the problem. He tells you that the problem is there's no end to all the people, because why? What does it mean there's no end? Generations come and they go. He's trying to wake up the people to the fact that your existence is temporary. So why are you going after, why are you spending all your energies in life for that which is temporary. You're not here very long. And they say they don't rejoice in this king. And this is the futility. This is the futility. But there's one word again, which I mentioned, that is repeated a number of times in here. See if you can detect it. And this is now going to help us understand why this phenomena exists. Don't just look for nouns, look for adjectives too. Our eye gets caught by the subject of a sentence, meaning who is it or what is it talking about? But sometimes there's a modifier, an adverb or an adjective, which is really what's used as a hint, and especially if it's repeated. Yes, all. You got it. That's right. In Hebrew, the word is kol. He says, I've seen all the living in the beginning of 15. And in 16, he says, there is no end to all the people, to all those who came before them. So three times, he says the word all. You tell me what it means. Yes.
This idea, it seems like, usually, generation will like to see themselves as something special. And by saying, the entire thing, that's kind of like stepping back and, saying that they're the same thing in the previous generations and the generations to come.
I don't understand.
What's that?
I didn't understand your point. I heard what you said. I didn't understand the point.
Okay. People of generation like to think like they're it. This is it right now, and not really see the big picture, the previous generations expired, and this generation took their place, but then also that means this generation will also expire, and there will be ones after this.
But what is the all? What does that have to do with the word all?
All would show that the that all the generations, share the same fate. They're all grouped together. There's not, this generation that is separate.
Okay, so you're saying that all means that there's no escape from expiration?
Right, they're not like a unique, people think like, their generation is like the unique thing. This is grouping them, all together in the same pot,
Okay, I agree with your point, but I don't think that's what he intends here, because that would, when he uses the word all the first time, he's just talking about all the living. He's not saying all in connection with expiration. The word all in all three cases is connected with people, not expiration. He said all the living, all the people and all those that came beforehand. So in all three, you know, all three times, the word all is referring to people of a certain generation. So the all is not saying all people that will not, it's not talking about expiration, that all will expire. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he's trying to tell you something by the fact that all people are doing something. So what I think he's saying is that he's giving you the reason why these people are going after the temporal. Because everybody's doing it. He's talking about a phenomena that people have a hard time feeling if everybody does it, it's wrong. Just the opposite. Nothing attracts a crowd like a crowd. You heard that saying. You see a whole bunch of people on the street and they're all looking up. You're going to stop and look up too. Well, if they're looking at something, there's got to be something which I have to take time out of my busy day to stop and look at. I attribute value to a crowd. So what he's telling you here is, why is this phenomenon true? It's not because any analysis has been done in terms of that going after the physical life is good. No, people are doing it because they're following everybody else. What you have basically is the blind leading the blind. But what you have a group phenomena that causes a person to have trepidation about going against them. So that's why he says, I've seen all the living. And then he says, there's no end to all the people and all those before them. Meaning, they also, just like he says, also the latter generation doesn't rejoice in the king. So that means to say that the first generations are not rejoicing in the king. But the question is, now why is this phenomenon happening? In order for us to really benefit from, you know, the wisdom of King Solomon, and for him really to teach us properly, he doesn't just describe a phenomenon, but he gives us insight into ourselves and to understand why this is true. Then you can finally move forward and think yourself if this is something which is worthy of following or abandoning. So he teaches us that the only reason people are doing this, why they're going after the masses, and they're also going after wealth and fame and all, because you have a few people in every generation. And, well, actually it started so many thousands of years ago, it hasn't stopped. That wealth and fame, and these are the initial emotions that we have at youth. So, of course, that's what a person's going to follow initially. Because that's the Torah says it. He ate through the other Ramnurim, that when God told Noah that he's going to destroy man, the reason is because man's instinctual drive has a head start over the intellect. So all these emotions are at work, ego, you know, fame, and wealth and money, and they all have a head start, so it's so difficult for most people to really detach themselves from and recognize. And of course, the most primary emotion is the immortality fantasy. People don't think they're going to die. So this is what the people are doing. They're going after this life because of the instinctual drives people have started in the beginning of man. People just started doing that, and you know, Adam's son killed the other one. Cain killed Abel. Because of jealousy. See, right from the outset, the emotions were there, taking them over. And one of Noah's sons had castrated his father because he did not want the kingdom of the earth to be divided amongst four sons. There were already three sons. He didn't want to have a diminution of you know, the portion that he was going to get. So if there just remains only three children, this way he increases his lot. So again, he too. So you see, all the way back to the beginning of man, these are the primary emotions that people have such a difficulty in removing from. And you see that King Solomon says that, according to Sforno, that this is what people are always doing. Most people in all generations, not just my generation, King Solomon says, but generations before me, this is how it's always been. People get attached to going after the temporary. They're not, I mean, you have to have a home and clothing and money, of course, but people look for more. They look for the imaginary. That's why he ends his commentary by saying that they're looking after that which is imaginary. Because it doesn't do anything more for you. There's only so much food you can eat, only so much clothing you can wear. There's only so many rooms you need in a house. But then you start investing in how you imagine people are going to view you. There's the insecurity. there's the competition, the ego. So what he's trying to tell you here is that he sees all the people that are traversing this temporary time under the sun. It's temporal activities that they're in. And there's no end. They mean to say that they ignore the fact that they come and go. There's no end to all the people. Meaning to say all the generations, it's going to continue going and you're going to expire. And that's what Swarna says at the end. But he says this is all happening because people are just following others without thinking about whether it's worth. The real drive is ego. That's what it means. When you follow what everybody else is doing, you want their approval. You don't want to go against what they're doing. You're concerned that you don't stand out like a sore thumb. So ego is at the root of this. But you see, the wise king doesn't go this way. He said they don't rejoice in him. So the wise person has it right. He tells you he's really the one that has it right. He's not going after the temporary. That's why he's trying to tell them. He's trying to rebuke them. So they don't. That's why they don't rejoice in him. Rabbi Mann once quoted a Talmudic source that says that any rabbi who his congregants love him is doing a rotten job. He's doing a poor job. Because why they like him? He's not saying anything to rebuke them. So you see here that they do not rejoice in this king because he is telling them things which are disheartening. It goes against their fantasies. But if they would sit and think and analyze and really take it to heart that they're going to expire just like the previous generations. And Sforno says at the end that their memory is lost already. Nobody knows anything about the previous generations. So why do you think you're going to be any different? You're going to stay forever?
Rabbi?
Yes.
Yeah, Rabbi, in the Tanakh that I'm holding, it says at the bottom of the footnote, it says, although people flocked around this new young king, he ultimately fell into disfavor because popularity is short-lived. Again, the comment is, this is your thing, things are temporary. Nothing lasts forever.
Well, I don't see that from the words, because it's not talking about popularity, and what it's talking about is the expiration of time, the expiration of a person's existence. So I don't see how that fits into the words of the verses. I don't agree with that the commentary. Again, that's like, you know, an example of, you know, it's nice, you know, it's true, but is that warranted by the text? I don't see that.
No, that's what I was wondering, because the comment on the two, the 15 and the 16 that we were just reading, and the two parts that we were just reading, and I was wondering if that's what it meant.
Yeah.
I thought that's what it meant.
Right, yeah, it doesn't
matter. Is short-lived.
Yeah, it doesn't seem warranted by the text.
No, I see that you're playing this, though. Okay.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So you see how he uses the word coal. You see that? Does everybody see that now? The word all, he uses it three times. Is that clear to everybody? Let you stand out now.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we have a little more time. This is just what I wanted to present for today. I didn't look further, so I can't take up for it. It looks like it's a new point anyway, the next verse.
Rabbi, could you just briefly summarize again then the point of the all, because I'm not sure I grasped it.
Yeah, sure. And if I could just ask that, unless you're asking a question or commenting, just put your mute button on just so it diminish whatever static we're getting. Thank you. So the point of all is that when a generation sees everybody around, all others doing something, that makes it difficult to go against them because there's an underlying emotion always at work of ego, of the need of the accolades of your peers of that generation. So when everybody does something, a person, number one, assumes it's true, it's correct, it's a value that I have to follow. But also, there's a motive of being accepted by the group. So when he says that all the living, I've seen all the living, what do you mean I've seen all the living doing something? Meaning King Salman is telling you that the phenomena is proliferating because it is something which everybody is doing. And people don't want to go against the crowd. They want acceptance. That's why you have a phenomena called culture. And that's what the Torah talks about, how generations follow what their fathers gave them. They fear the father, you know. The fear of a father is something which is, in, you know, is bred into a child's psyche from youth. And unfortunately, most of the time, that fear tends to blind the person to thinking independently. Whatever I receive from my forefathers, that's it. But you see that in the Laws of Kings, Maimonides says in the future, the generations that don't follow Judaism are going to say that our forefathers bequeathed to us lies, meaning they're going to realize that their religion is false. So when King Solomon says, I've seen all people doing this, and he says it three times, he's trying to show you that that's why it becomes a phenomenon that everybody follows. Because people are attracted to what everybody else is doing. They, for some reason, they associate mass following to truth. They equate the two. If everybody's doing it, it has to be true. So he's trying to explain to the reader the phenomena that you should now begin to question yourself and not to follow such a thing. Don't follow the masses. That's what the mistake of all these generations did before. And they just went after the physical life and they ignored the fact that they can have an eternal existence after they die. You read the Duties of the Heart, it talks a lot about that.
Thank you.
Okay, sure. Okay, so Avner, I hope that's answer your original question. All right, Naomi, I hope that's clear. Okay, if there's any other questions or comments, I mean, we have a little more time, so. Is the point clear to everybody? Are there any other questions?
Rabbi, you say that this phrase that they don't rejoice in him applies to his generation as well as the prior and later generations?
No, it says also... also
my translation...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'll say that those generations, you know, the latter generations that don't rejoice in him means to tell you that also the later generations won't rejoice in the wise king. So that means the prior generations too ignored it. All the generations that ends up ignore the wisdom and they go after the emotions. They just want money, wealth, fame, everything temporal. What did you say your translation said?
Well, my translation of verse 15 says, I saw all the living that wander beneath the sun throng to the succeeding youth who steps into his place, which seems like that generation would then be rejoicing in him. And then when you're moving into 16, there is no end to the entire nation to all that was before them. Similarly, the ones that will come later will not rejoice in him. The way that reads in this translation seems to suggest that it's only the earlier generations and later generations that aren't rejoicing in him, and that the temporality is that this generation does, but prior and later generations don't.
No, that's an incorrect. That's incorrect translation. It does not say that they throng to him. I'll translate it to English. Again, I've seen all the living that travel under the sun with the second child that rose in his place. Just means they traveled under the sun with his child. That means that they're coexisting with him. Does not mean they throng. Doesn't talk about any positive attachment to that wise child.
Okay. I think I see. Thank you.
Sure.
Jim, do you have the living knock? Is that what you're reading out of?
No, this is the art scroll, Stone Edition.
Oh, okay, because I'm looking at the living knock, and they have also put in brackets the word thronging.
Well, this is making in brackets, which is what makes it really confusing.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Ibn Ezra says just the opposite. He says on verse 16, where there's no end, he says, even though he is wise, meaning the second king, they do not rejoice in him, all the living. He refers back to all the living in verse 15. And he says they do not rejoice in him. Because the statutes of a king are difficult for the people to follow. See, Ibn Ezra says clearly that that's incorrect.
Is it in the Hebrew there, is it really like a word for with in this verse?
Yes, the word im.
What is it?
Im, ayin mem, with the child.
Okay. Okay, I see it now. Okay. Yeah, I misread it.
Yep. Mitsuda's Devasid says also similarly. Because it's not in the hands of the king to really break the will of people to go after the right life. If so, it's futile. That's how he ends off 16. Meaning he's the king. Is that the futility is referring to the king's attempts to try to benefit the people and educate them properly. But there are a few. There are a few. I mean, you see, King David was able to raise King Solomon. He gave him wisdom, and King Solomon stuck to the right path. And, you know, there are individuals. I'm not sure if we mentioned last week, but there was a rabbi who once said that because of me, the world was created. And that was not an arrogant statement. He was making a statement that for the people that follow the Torah, that's really the ones who benefit from physical the best. They don't overindulge. So they don't hurt themselves. And they are, but more primarily, they're involved in wisdom, which affords the greatest life, here and in the next world. So he's making a statement, though, that most people have a hard time withdrawing from satisfying their lusts and their the psychological needs, their infantile needs, the ego, the fame. That's why evil speech is such a difficult thing for people. That's how they've gotten used to making themselves feel good, is by talking about others. But there's many. The speech is a very big outlet for people. But I think that's the message of his two verses over here. All right. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you, Rabbi.
Yeah, and you'll see also, just as a note, I probably mentioned it before, that the chapters in the Torah throughout are not something to pay any attention to. For example, the next verse, which is the last verse in 4, is connected with the first verse in 5, chapter 5. You see both cases talking about...
Well, it seems like...
Go ahead, Josh.
I was just going to say, it seems like in the... this is kind of for next time, but that last verse in 4 seems to be a big kind of shift where he seems to be addressing the reader, like, directly with advice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's talking about, in both cases, you'll see that it's talking about before God. Or it's talking about, we'll have to see if it's talking about, when the Rashi, it's talking about God, when you go to the temple. And also the next one, it says, don't be quick to speak anything, to talk quickly before God, because God is in heaven and you are on earth. I mean, that's 5:1. So you see, in both cases, it's talking about God, using the word Elohim, the governor. You'll take a look at those two verses for next week. That's what we'll pick up with. So we'll have to do them together. Let's see if it goes further than there. Yeah, and also 5:2 is connected, because you see the beginning of 2 in chapter 5 starts off with the word because. So that has to be a continuation of a previous statement. You can't say because and then, unless you're talking about what you previously said. So it looks like we'll have to do 4:17 and then 5:1 and 2 for next week. If you want to start looking at, looking over that. All right, so I guess we'll wrap it up here, and we'll pick it up next week. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay, sure. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.